beauty and truth often lie in the simplest of places, and this is really well illustrated by the duo of Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. I'm joined by them today here in the WMU Takeda studio. We have Phil Berry and Sarah First. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you for having us.
So why don't we get right into some music? If maybe, Sarah, you could introduce your first tune for us.
Sure. This first song is called Let's Be Friends. So here we go.
Can't imagine a day we could ever say goodbye. Can't imagine a world where I could turn on you. Oh, honey, could never do. Time would move so slow and all the good things would last. Don't know how the days and weeks ever move so fast. Can't imagine a time you could turn on me. Oh, honey, can never be. Honey, won't you be my honey? Honey, I can do it the same. There's nothing left to argue about, no one left to blame. Can't imagine a time this feeling could end. Oh, honey, let's be friends. Stars align, paint the sky together from the start. Don't know how the sun and moon could ever stay apart. Can't imagine a way you could turn. Oh, honey, can never bear. Honey, won't you be my honey? Honey, I can do the same. There's nothing left to argue about, no one left to blame. Can't imagine a time this feeling could end. Oh, honey, let's be friends.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
So, first question first. How much of a fan of Clint Eastwood movies are you? Is that the reason behind the name, or was it totally a weird coincidence?
No, it's kind of a funny story, though. It's like Sarah's actually never seen the movie.
Nope.
It's kind of our running joke. No, as anybody knows that's ever tried to name a band, it's one of the most difficult things in the world. And so we, you know, came up with,
I don't know, a list of 20 of them at least, possibilities.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
And we just felt that one was a little bit humorous. And the movie itself, for those who don't know it, is it's a buddy road film. We thought that was appropriate.
There's something about picking a band name. Like, you don't want people to to read into it too much, or you create this expectation.
Oh, right? Totally. Exactly. Definitely. So, yeah.
Do you, I'm just trying to think of the most, you know, ridiculous and off the wall band name that I know, but sometimes the more ludicrous it is, the more it, allows people to focus on your music. 'Cause,
ooh, I like that.
That's, I don't know. So I'm thinking Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, and I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan. So I know the movie, and I just had this idea of what you would sound like in my head. And
did it match?
No.
No.
But awesome. It's okay, because it's awesome. And yeah, it's whether it was intentional or not, mm-hmm. it really just brought me closer to your intent.
Huh.
So
interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that was the effect. It was, I don't know if it was the intention, but yeah, it's a tricky name in a band for sure.
Yeah.
But we're pretty happy with this.
The other thing is that everything's taken, you know, like we went through this
series
of like, it got to the point where it was just ridiculous. I would think of like the worst possible band names and then I'd Google it. And sure enough,
it was still taken.
There was a band called that.
Yeah, everything's on the internet, right? It's almost too easy.
Seems to be.
Yeah. So maybe if we can talk a little bit about your background and your path to where you are. As a band dork myself, I'm a trombone player, and I had a very linear path to where I would be. So I'm, you know, was in band, and then that brought me into marching band, and it brought me to music education. This
sure.
whole predictable line. I feel with guitar, it's not always cut and dry. There's, you know, several opportunities for guitarists to play in like jazz band or mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But I feel like you kind of have to forge your own path a little bit more, because you may not be in band and orchestra. It may be a secondary mm-hmm. instrument. So maybe if we can start with you, Sarah, and just talk about what got you to where you are now as
oh,
far
goodness.
As...
Well, my path was maybe not so straight ahead as yours. As a kid, I did study music. I did band in the, you know, middle school and high school, and I studied French horn, actually. And then I did a lot of choir as well. I give my high school choir director, Mr. Richard Hintz, if you're out there, hello. I give him a lot of credit for my ability to sing harmony. I learned a lot from him. Then when I graduated from high school, I actually joined a pop rock band with my brother and my best friend, Molly. And that was called Doxy. And we, I don't know, we had a little bit of success for a few years, released some albums, did a little bit of touring. Then that ended up breaking up, and... I kind of decided to take a little bit of a turn in music, and I picked up the upright bass. So I played electric bass in the rock band, and then I picked up the upright bass and started playing with some friends, and we formed the Cornfed Girls, which Phil and I are both in, along with four other members, and played upright, started to really start singing some harmony, and really focus on that. And I don't know, 2-3 years ago, Phil and I decided to just kind of start this other project. He had a lot of songs off of a solo album that he released. And so we kind of started with that. And then we just kind of started writing songs for this project. So that's how I got here. Phil?
No, I appreciate your comment, Craig, about how with guitar players, it's you do have to sort of forge your own path in many ways, you know. Because it's still, in you know, many respects, sort of considered a folk instrument. But yeah, for me, I started in junior high playing trumpet, and it didn't stick. And I think one of the issues was that like nobody was turning me on to cool trumpet players that I might enjoy. You know, it was just like this really academic thing that... just couldn't get to. And when I quit that, I picked up the guitar. I got a degree in from Western, actually, in anthropology. And while I was doing that, I formed a rock band called Knee Deep Shag And we played for many years, and we toured all over, released albums. Through that, the Corn Fed Girls and, multiple other projects sort of happened because of it. And then a few years ago, like Sarah said, I had this handful of songs that I've been writing that were more sort of fingerstyle and approach. And they sort of lent themselves to more of a scaled back instrumentation. Hmm. And so that was sort of the impetus for this project.
Could you explain fingerstyle playing and the basic elements behind that?
Yeah, so with the guitar, there's what a lot of people don't realize, I think, is that all the magic happens with the right hand. Like, it's, everybody's sort of, rightly so at the beginning, kind of focused on the left hand because you have to learn all of your chord shapes and your scales and all of that. But then after that, really, the feel is from the right hand. And it doesn't matter if it's, Keith Richards or Segovia, and they've got this really awesome right hand, And so there's lots of approaches that players can take. Most players play with a pick, especially if it's rock or just kind of open chord strumming things. But with the fingerstyle, it sort of turns the guitar into this little orchestra in many ways, because you can play bass notes, play bass runs on the lower strings, and play melody parts on the higher strings. So it just, it's more of almost a piano-like approach than playing with a pick.
I was sitting here watching you, and just, it's overwhelming the ability you have to accompany yourself. And just like you said, you have all the tools at your fingertips with creating a bass line and then the chords beneath, and you can sing. And as a trombone player, there's only so much I can do.
Right.
So does that influence the way you think about writing your music? Just, you have all these tools available to you. Is it easier or is it overwhelming that, you can essentially do anything you want?
That's a challenge. Absolutely. I think you get to the point too where, once you've been doing it for long enough, like you realize that you have all these options, and it's difficult sometimes to choose, but really with songwriting, it usually, at least for me, it doesn't come from that. Like, usually it's some kind of, melodic idea or a lyric or something. And then you just have to kind of find ways to flesh that out as effectively as you can. Hmm. But certainly sometimes it'll start with a guitar pattern that I've been working on. But, you're right. That's a major challenge.
Yeah. And Sarah, you mentioned bass, but you also have a ukulele with you. I don't mean to spoil the surprise for later on. In learning all the different instruments that you play, did you gravitate towards one more than another, or has bass always been your first love?
Oh boy.
It's a loaded question, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I really feel most comfortable singing harmony. That's like, I kind of view that as my most natural instrument. I'm definitely like a jack of all trades, master of none kind of deal, so the uke is somewhat new. I picked it up a couple of years ago, really. And it is nice because you can't really accompany yourself with a bass. I love bass, but when I am fairly new to writing music, definitely having something available to accompany myself while I'm writing opens the doors significantly. I also do a lot of writing on the piano. I'm not a pianist, but I can manage out, pick out the chords that I'm looking for to write. I don't play it live or anything, but I guess I'd consider my main instrument my harmony singing. But it's fun to dabble in all sorts of different instruments.
Yeah. You know, gives you lots of freedom and versatility.
It does. Do what you want. Yeah. Especially, with our new record coming out, not only did we have songs that featured fingerstyle guitar and the two vocals like you just heard, But we had a lot of fun fleshing out a handful of tunes into full band arrangements. So I did get to play some electric bass and some upright bass and some other kind of random things like Mellotron and some keys. And so it opens up the doors for that as well as, you know, like experimenting when you're recording, which we had a lot of fun doing.
Could you explain what a Mellotron is?
Ooh, boy.
In six words or less.
No, I can't. No, it's a... I know it from like Beatles songs, mm-hmm. really.
I think when people started using it was the 60s.
Yeah.
It was sort of the precursor
the late
to
60s,
the
probably.
Modern keyboard.
Yeah. I think it's used on Lucy, right?
Yep.
In the Sky with Diamonds, which is a Beatles tune.
Mm-hmm. Famous example is Stairway to Heaven.
Well, if you're ready, maybe we can move on to some more music. If maybe Phil, you could introduce the next tune that you're going to play.
It's called Goodbye Is Not the End. We just thought it worked really well as a duo. And so we sort of started including it in the live set. And then when it came time to pick songs for the album, we thought that would sound really cool in there too. So we worked it up again. And
this is one of those songs where when we play it live, like we are about to, it's fingerstyle guitar and some uke and some vocals. But it was one of those songs that we fleshed out in recording. So on the recording, it has upright guitar and...
Mike Lynch came in and played some accordion.
Accordion.
He's a well-known Michigan musician that we were honored to have.
Yeah, and some drums, too. Right?
And some Jeff Maley playing drums on this one.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, this is Phil Berry and Sarah First of Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. We're here live in WMUK's Takeda studio, and this is their tune, Goodbye Is Not the End.
Goodbye, old friend. We could always pretend it's not the end of the road. I don't know what you've been told. You're the one for me in our room down by the sea. I'll say I knew you when goodbye was not the end. Starry sky, the moon is bright,
the moon is bright.
You shouldn't be on your own tonight, so
let's move
and sway. Promise it will always be this way. Cause you're the one for me in our room down by the sea. You'll say you knew me when goodbye was not the end.
Wonderful tune. That was great. Just happy little song. I was rocking back and forth in my chair. I hope I didn't distract you.
Not at all.
You both operate so well as a duo, and just kind of melding your sound into one and playing off of one another. I wondered if you could talk about maybe the advantages and disadvantages, maybe, of performing as a duo. You have to be more creative, I imagine, and stretch your sound in some cases, or just be happy with the simplicity of the structure of your group. Phil, if you could talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's you summed it up really well. In some ways, it's one of the more challenging things that I think I've done, in that there's just not much going on, you know, like there's sort of, you know, with bands, I think there's the sense of there being safety in numbers.
I'm pretty exposed.
Yeah.
For sure. And poor Phil, he does all the heavy lifting in our band, I like to say, because he's true. The guitar player. He's singing, and he also wears a little harmonica thing so that he can play that at the same time, so he can cover solos. And just I'm just sitting back there drinking tea. No, but you're definitely more exposed during performing, and a kind of a challenge for us, especially given our history. We play a lot of bar gigs, not a lot, but that's kind of where we're used to playing, and there can be some issues with, like, you know, crowd noise and us getting lost. So we really try to find good venues where it's a listening audience. It's, you know, it can be challenging, but that's a little bit trickier in this outfit. You know, if I were to compare it to the Corn Fed Girls, where there's six members and we're all, all involved and singing. And so that's a little bit of a challenge, being broken down into a duo like this.
I think going into it, you mentioned playing in bars and the challenges probably in a noisy setting, and
right,
you have people that maybe just wanted to show up and have a drink.
Exactly. Yeah, and have a conversation.
How dare they?
The nerve.
So do you find yourself trying to book more rooms where listening is the focus?
Definitely.
And people can really truly appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those are our dream gigs.
Yeah, it's true. You know, like, and I don't think we necessarily realized that early on, but that's definitely what we're always looking for, is listening room style shows. You know, that's also adds another layer of pressure, though, because, like, you know, full attention is on the
performer. And everyone's listening.
There's really nowhere to hide. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, as long as you get your headspace together, like, it usually works out fine. But it's a different, different experience playing as a duo than playing as a full band.
Yeah.
So, getting back to your roots, with folk music, there's such a rich tradition, and you can certainly go down the list of influential people. I just wonder if you could touch on some of your early musical memories, and it doesn't necessarily have to be folk musicians, and just whether these things influenced you at all, or if you can see them manifest themselves in your playing later on, be it artists or music, or what was going on in your home growing up as far as music is concerned. Maybe Sarah, if you can tell us about that.
Definitely. I grew up in a family of folkies. My dad played mandolin with the local band Sweet Corn for many years. So I grew up, you know, listening to late night practices in my living room. My mom is a singer as well. She sang a lot in church. I was surrounded by a lot of music when I was young. And a lot of, like, folk harmony singing too. I'm just trying to think of the McGarrigle Sisters and Emmylou Harris and Red Clay Ramblers. Those are all bands that I grew up with and that I still listen to. Honestly, it's still very much a big part of my life.
How about you, Phil? Yeah. Any?
Yeah. We grew up in a time before the internet. And so, my earliest, my parents introduced me to some you know, some music early on. We had records in the house, and so I was aware of people like the Beatles and things very early on. But the when I got a little bit older, I would just listen to the radio all the time. You know, like I would lay in bed at night just surfing the dial. And I gravitated towards stuff, you know, like at the time, you know, like David Bowie, and I remember hearing that on the radio, and John Lennon had some songs on the radio, and that making a huge impression. And just, you know, realizing that these people were writing these songs a lot of the time, and that was a big light bulb moment for me. Like, whoa, you can just do that?
And people will pay you.
I don't know about just do that, but...
Yeah. So that was, you know, that was the, I think, the impetus for me, a lot of that early radio stuff.
You said something that really ticked off a light bulb in my head. A couple things. One about listening to the radio and how much that affected you. And then you talked about the internet. And that's opening a can of worms, and we can go down that rabbit hole. But it's certainly affected music. For better or for worse. Yeah. And you have access to infinite amounts of information. What an amazing gift and what an amazing tool. But at the same time, it's got to have some negative effects. Then you mentioned radio. So with radio, I think that kind of cuts back to the singular focus is that you're there listening. And you don't have any other filter to... process and affect your thought. It goes straight from someone's mouth to your ears, to your brain, and you can synthesize that as you see fit. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, do you, as a folk musician, do you feel some responsibility to uphold that and stay true to, you know, the true sense of what you're trying to do?
No.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, like, personally, I would say no. And again, I think back to us recording this new album, and the technology for recording is amazing at this point. Like, you can pretty much do anything you want, really. I mean, there's technology out there that will do it. And so for those tunes where we kind of expanded and explored a little bit more beyond the fingerstyle guitar and the two vocals. We had a lot of fun. We worked with Ian Gorman, who's a local sound engineer. He has a beautiful studio called La Luna. We love Ian, and we could go on and on about Ian, but he's just a master at his craft, and he really was able to be the kind of the middleman. Like, we tell him what we wanted, what we're looking for. And we, you know, I like to think that we explored some different sounds and vibes, and he really was able to give us what we were looking for. So no, it's not like, I wouldn't call this album like a traditional folk album. Parts of it maybe are, but certainly other parts of it could be called pop, or you know. So no, we're not hardcore folkies.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember too that, like, a lot of people, like, you know, maybe outside the folk world, but like, they would use all the technology available to them when recording. You know, like the Beatles are a great example. You know, but I think the downside is, there's just so much stuff out there these days that it seems like it's easy for things to get lost.
Yeah.
Like that's the problem, you know, and in my mind, you know, like, people release these amazing albums, and then like a week later, like, you don't hear anything.
You're
about
on to
it.
The next thing.
Yeah, it's kind of an oversaturation.
Yeah.
Is that what
almost. It's hard. It's like a fine line, because nowadays you can record in your home with your MacBook or whatever, and you can put out a pretty good product. So it's awesome that, like, you have that availability. But like Phil said, I think it there's so much content now that it's hard to weed through it all. And there's some amazing people and musicians out there. you know, that kind of get lost in the shuffle, I think. So I don't know. It's double-edged sword, I guess. Absolutely. I don't know, with technology and all that good stuff.
Well, it sounds like you put a real positive spin on things, Sarah, just in, and Phil, you echoed this as well, just using this to your advantage and riding the wave of all this great technology that you have to put forth your best possible product.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna move on to some more music, shall we? Maybe, Phil, if you could introduce the next tune for us again.
This is actually one that Sarah wrote.
Well, maybe we'll have Sarah talk about it then.
Huh? I'm happy to talk about it.
What do you have to say about my song? So we took about, 10 months to record our album. And pretty early on, we had picked out the songs that we wanted to record. And we had decided we wanted 10 songs on our album. And there was the elusive 10th song that we hadn't written yet. And so I can't remember why I decided, but I decided we needed a waltz of some sort. So I decided to sit down and write a song in 3/4 time. And this was kind of inspired by a couple of different things. This is basically a song about wedding vows and what I've been married now for 14 years. And I'd like to think that I know a little bit about marriage at this point. And in retrospect, I can think of some vows that might be more appropriate than the ones that I took. I don't know, maybe not. But so anyway, my dear friend Gerald and Amanda, they were married about the same time that I was married. And Gerald is a lovely gentleman who actually is going to be opening for our CD release show on July 29th at Louis. He's a wonderful singer-songwriter. Anyway, his beautiful wedding vows also kind of helped to inspire this song. It's a song about wedding vows and maybe the more truthful aspects of wedding vows. It's called Dearly Beloved.
Dearly beloved, we're gathered today to witness the union and the love on display, to share our intentions. True, and the vows were written just for you. I promise to save you all the last bites, and I'll refill your water for the middle of the night. Pour the mushrooms forever, load the dishwasher right. This is how I'll prove my love. Say, screw tradition, not one is obeyed. It's the love that we want to convey. I promise to always leave the seat down and no backseat driving on the way into town. I'll kill all of the spiders. Thank you. the start when assembling furniture. I'll refer to the chart and I'll never cheat a Scrabble till death do us part. This is how I'll prove my love to you. This is how I'll prove my love to you.
That was great, guys.
Thank you.
I'm not married, but I could see just in the lyrics that it's more about the simple things that add up over time. It's those little one percenters that are really showing your love to the person that you're with. Am I paraphrasing that correctly?
Right, exactly. That's what I was going for. Yeah, it's the little things that matter, you know? And some of that is autobiographical. Some of it is not, but...
You don't have to say which ones.
No. If only he'd load the dishwasher right? No, it was a fun song to write and to think about, you know?
Yeah, and that was one of the ones we actually did live in the studio. It was sort of this running project where, like, we knew we wanted to do one live thing, and we thought that would be a good candidate for it. And so every couple weeks, we'd
try it, you know, a handful of times. And I don't know, we'd do two or three sessions of that before we finally found the perfect one. So yeah. That was a fun way to record, because we don't usually do the whole shebang live, so... That was fun.
In preparing for this, I came across Bob Dylan's Nobel Prize accepted speech from last year.
Yeah.
And he just echoed on some really simple points. And one of them was, he was talking about William Shakespeare, and just, you know, he's known as this, you know, huge, great figure in literature. He referenced that and said, you know, I don't think he ever... William Shakespeare ever thought of himself as, you know, trying to craft these beautiful, important tomes that would be, you know, followed for years and years. He was more worried about, okay, do I have enough money for this? where am I going to find a skull? I'm quoting all this. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, I don't think we're sitting down trying to be... A lyricist. You're not trying to force these things out. They just kind of happen. And it was really amazing to hear someone so powerful, so important talk about this. And he viewed himself the same way, in that you know, while he's had the ability to play all over the world in all kinds of venues, he's never really thought of himself as, you know, a poet or a lyricist, or that his music could be considered as literature. I wondered if you view your music the same way, if you're just talking about what's going on in your life and it just comes out this way.
That's a great question. I don't know. I guess I would look at it first as the way you listen to music. For me personally, it's been the melody that has attracted me to a song. The lyric content has always been kind of the second factor. And to be honest, like, really, I didn't start paying attention to lyrics for a long time. It was always the hook, the melody that made it a good song to me. Like I said, I started writing music relatively recently. I've always been very nervous about writing in general and that kind of thing. I guess it just depends on the song. I would say that typically I come up with the melody first, and then I build the lyrics around the melody. The theme of the song, it just, sometimes I go in, like this last song, the wedding vow song, I had that idea right away. And so I knew right that I would be able to build the song around that subject. But then there's another song that I wrote where I just had this really nice melody that I wanted to write lyrics to, and it just kind of, it turned out to be about this certain topic, but I didn't go in thinking, I'm going to write a song about, you know, whatever. And that's generally how I write. I don't know. How do you write, Phil?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's different every song, absolutely. But what I've sort of learned over time is that it's easy for me to psych myself out, like, you know, sitting down with a blank sheet of paper. And I think if you put that pressure on, like, you need to come up with something that would stand next to Bob Dylan or Shakespeare, like, you're never going to write anything, you know what I mean? So I think it's important to give yourself that freedom. And, you know, really for me, like, I really try to keep that just a really pure, honest space where I try not to judge it too much, and I just try to get ideas down on the paper, you know, whether they're lyrical ideas or, you know, musical ideas. I think what I always come back to is it's got to be honest, you know, and whatever that means. Like, it could be, you know, the lyrics or the emotion behind the melody or the chord structure. And so I guess that's always how I measure it, you know. Could I stand behind this as something that, you know, I could stand in front of people and play?
Yeah.
But it's absolutely different every song. And some songs are more lyrically based, and that you definitely run into that more with the folk style of playing. But yeah, different every song.
There's a, yeah, you mentioned honesty and being true, and this, the simplicity of folk music, I feel there's always a story that's being told, and it's really easy to synthesize that. It's something about this form of music. There's, well, maybe it's just the setting. You know, it's just the two of you. It's not a huge band. It's just the music and the lyrics. And there's something really comforting about that. And it seems a little bit more poetic. It seems a little bit more honest and true. Hmm. And it's so effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. Phil, I've known you first as a teacher, and I wondered how teaching has influenced your playing or your musicianship, your songwriting, if it has at all.
Oh man, yeah, I feel like I learned so much from my students. You know, for the listeners, I'm a guitar teacher by day, yeah, I teach out at Marshall Music in Portage a few days a week, and out of my house a little bit, and I've been doing it for, you know, a lot of years at this point, and I really just have some amazing individuals that come in, and what's cool is, like, you always get taken on the ride, you know, like, they come in and they're like, oh, I love this band or this song, and, you know, like, and so they want to know what's happening in the song, and so you have to sit there and figure out the chord structure and explain it to this other person. And so absolutely, you know, like, I feel like every day I learn stuff, or I, you know, and so that's how I found a lot of my favorite artists. You know, I had this local doctor was taking lessons from me for a while, and he turned me on to Mississippi John Hurt, this early fingerstyle, you know, blues guitar player. And that was just life-changing, you know, and I don't know, I probably would have found him eventually, but not in that way. You know, where I was sort of, I had to sit down and, like, learn some songs. And so, yeah, that's something I continue to draw inspiration from. Absolutely.
That's great. As cliche as it sounds, you learn so much from your students, and,
absolutely
just being put in that situation where you have to kind of look at things through their eyes in order to understand them. You can grow just as much. That's cool. Sarah, do you any teaching, or have you done any teaching in the past?
Well, not music teaching. my day job, I'm an RN, and I work at WMU's School of Medicine, where we teach residents how to be doctors. So I do that kind of teaching, but not music teaching. So, yeah. Well,
teaching all the same, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'd like to share one of the new album tracks with our listeners and give you guys a break from playing here. Again, the album is called Songs for Mixed Company, and it will be released Saturday, July 29th at Louis' Trophy House Grill. Is there a particular song you'd like to play for us?
Sure. I think we're going to do Miss Me, which is... it's a song that I brought to Phil. This was actually like my first formal song that I wrote. He helped me tremendously with the chorus. wouldn't be a song without the chorus. But we kind of tried to go for a country vibe with this song. It's a full band arrangement. So we've got drums. I'm on electric bass. Phil does both acoustic guitar and some electric work. And I think there's some organ and piano in there as well. So I'm just kind of going for that cool country vibe, smoky bar, you know, feel. So, yeah, it's called Miss Me.
Wonderful. We'll hear that now. This is Weekend, Let's Hear It, and we're with Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
You miss me. I can tell by the way you look, you wanna kiss me. Never mind what you said before walking out the door, crying you can't love me anymore. You need me. Didn't know what was coming next when you were set free. Didn't plan on me moving on, figured you'd be gone. Thinking you and I just don't belong. I've been living without you. Though the pain of it is true. Long ago our love was lost. My heart's not the only cause. Forget there was hell to pay. I've been crying in my beer, wishing I could hold you near. But your love don't pass the test, and I think it's for the best if we go our own. Told me, baby, love was just a bill of goods you bought and sold me. Now you're saying that you wanna try, never wondering why you and I had ever said goodbye. You left me with a reckless heart and mind lost in the high sea. Now I'm searching for a compass rose, and God only knows a magnetic north will prove to show. I've been living without you. Not the only cost. Don't forget there was hell to pay. I've been crying in my beer, wishing I could hold you near. But your love don't pass the test, and I think it's for best if we go our own way. If we go our own way.
What a wonderful tune. That was great. So your new album is coming out soon, as we've just discussed. And is there a theme in general that you had with this, or were you, is this a collection of all the things that you've been working on for the past year or so?
this time we, you know, we had more of a budget to work with than I'd ever had before, I think, with going to an album. We applied for a grant from the Kalamazoo Arts Council and got it. And so we had a little more freedom, I think, than we'd maybe been used to in the
Certainly.
Past. Which allowed us to experiment with, you know, different instrumentations and overdubs. And we were able to experiment a lot more than maybe we normally would have. But yeah, the songs, you know, some of them were older songs that, you know, maybe we've been sitting on. And then a few of them were written for the album.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to find out more about Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, where would you direct them to do so?
Yes. we have a website, and that's thunderboltandlightfootband.com. You can go there, and then really from there, you can access our Facebook and our YouTube and our Instagram. And I think we have a Twitter account that we've never actually tweeted on. I don't know.
I'm saving it up.
So many options out there. But yeah, thunderboltandlightfootband.com is really the best place to find out what we're up to.
Great. Circling back to that media thing, there's just plenty of opportunity to get your message out there, right?
Yep.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys for coming into the studio today. It's been great listening and having a front row seat.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Thanks, Greg.